tears roll down your face. Reaching for something, someone to embrace. To numb pain.
Welcome to Sobriety Checkpoint. I'm your host, Felicia Hermley. I'm a 12-stepper turned therapist. I'm married and I have two littles under five. I love Jesus, but have had my fair share of struggling with church culture and religion. I know what it's like to be stuck in a restless, irritable, and discontent rut, drunk and sober. In this podcast, you're going to hear stories of hope for sober living, as well as solutions for navigating mental health, spirituality, and relationships in recovery. Grab your keys and let's go for a drive. There's no judgment or breathalyzer at this sobriety checkpoint. Welcome back to Sobriety Checkpoint. I'm excited to have Matt Scaletti on the show. Matt Scaletti is a widely regarded international keynote speaker on mental health and creating breakthroughs. He's created breakthroughs in his own life, going from alcoholic, divorced, and obese to two-time world record holder, Navy SEAL, Kokoro grad, and he once ran 21 marathons in 21 days for charity. He speaks from the heart and shares stories of his own setbacks, screw-ups, and obstacles, so you can learn from his mistakes and become your best self. I wanted to start with talking about the Navy SEAL Kokoro. I looked up that word, and the reason that I wanted to start there, I think it's a beautiful word. Do you know what that word means?
You know what? That's so funny you said that. I looked it up before, and I don't know now. We actually talked about it. This was last July. You're going to have to refresh my memory on what it means. I'm curious now.
It's a Japanese word for heart, mind, soul, or essence.
Oh, yes. I like that.
Does that refresh your memory a bit?
Yeah, it does. And that was actually, it's interesting you say that about a Japanese word as well, because there's another one called ikigai that we talked about at the event as well, which basically just means like your purpose, your soul's meaning. And yeah, I love that. Yeah, Kokoro was... I meant to talk about whatever part of that event you want. It was definitely the most intense, wild experience I've ever had in my life. So if you just want me to jump in, I'm happy to share a couple takeaways and stories.
I like what this word means. And I just feel like that is kind of a good place to start this episode, because I think that you have a lot of heart, mind, soul. I think you have a lot of essence. I just got that vibe from you when we had our intro call a couple of weeks ago, and you've done a lot of really cool stuff. And I'm wondering, before we get to that, what was life like before you started doing all these cool things?
Yeah, I'm happy to share that as well. So I'm a very open book. Feel free to ask any questions that you want about any of this. And if you want me to dive deeper, I'm happy to do that too. My life, honestly, growing up was... I almost feel guilty saying this, but it was almost like too easy. Like, I was blessed to have a great childhood. I got great grades in high school. I went off and in like junior, senior year of high school, captain of the basketball team, 4.0 GPA, like dating the head cheerleader. It was like everything that I could have like dreamed of, that society makes it look like that's success. And then I went off to college, and I think it was my lack of having setbacks. I didn't have much resiliency, and I don't think I had real confidence in myself at all. It was almost like fake confidence based on external things going well. And I got introduced to alcohol, and I started drinking four nights a week freshman year. I'd never really been drunk before that. Yeah, introduced to alcohol freshman year of college, and I drank four nights a week freshman year, five nights sophomore year, six nights junior year, every night of the week senior year. And I mean, I was a full-blown alcoholic by the end of my senior year of college. And I told myself, well, that's okay. Everybody drinks in college. I'll graduate, get a real job, and just stop drinking, not realizing that it wasn't that easy, because it was a part of my identity now. It was how I associated myself. I was the party guy. I was the fun guy. I was the guy, if you wanted to have a bunch of people over, I'd bring even more, and we would throw down and be loud and wild and dance and have fun. So I almost liked the identity that I was creating, even though it was extremely unhealthy for my mindset, for my body, for everything long term. I took a job in Boston selling spring break travel packages, which was not smart because I was even more involved in alcohol. And I actually got fired from that job 2 years in because of drinking. And they didn't say that on the exit interview, but I had, that's really the problem. I was drunk at certain events and I was embarrassing myself and embarrassing that company. So they fired me. I took a job back in Pittsburgh in finance and I still couldn't right the ship. And it wasn't until my first rock bottom was in 2011. After Halloween party, I wake up on the floor of my living room Sunday morning, like 6 a.m. The TV's still blaring. The lights are on. There's beer cans all over the place. And I staggered my way up the stairs. And this was really a major shift in my mindset in this morning, in this moment. Staggered my way up the stairs. My head's pounding, hungover. Sunday morning, 6 a.m. And I was going to the bathroom, but I looked at myself in the mirror. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe who's looking back. And I get emotional thinking about it because for the first time in my life, I hated my reflection. And I was 55, 60 pounds overweight. I was scared of everything. I was scared to walk out of my door sober. I was scared to do anything in the business world. I don't think I had any idea who I was. And this is in my mid to late 20s. But the life-changing moment was I projected out, and I call it a negative vision or like a breakthrough vision now, where I thought, okay, as I'm looking at myself in the mirror, I thought, what if I keep doing this lifestyle for 10 more years? What will my life look like when I'm 40? And I could only come up with two outcomes, which were jail or I'd be dead. And I think that's what would have happened had I projected out those 10 years. And it was that moment where I was like, so maybe it doesn't have to be this way. Instead of blaming everybody else, I was so good at that. I blamed my friends for my alcohol problem. I blamed my family because they would drink wine. I blamed God. I blamed whoever I could instead of taking ownership for myself. And it was really that moment that triggered a shift of maybe I have more power in this than I originally thought. And that started the journey. So I met a mentor 2 weeks after that by chance. He still mentors me to this day, 13 years later. He's like a bodybuilding champion. He's 20 years older than me, so he knows the road ahead. He's a big time motivational speaker as well. So he sort of showed me a path that I didn't even know existed. And it was just the perfect timing on that. So that started 6 months later. I had lost 60 pounds. I was competing in these bodybuilding shows. And I guess I'm obsessive. So when I go in on something, I go all in or all out. And I went all out in the partying and all in on healthy living. And that started some of these fun stories that I've been blessed to be able to experience over the last 13 years.
Were there any conversations or events that took place that sort of clicked at that point when you were looking at yourself in the mirror? Like, had there been conversations with people? Had there been, you know, people maybe bothering you about your drinking? Or, you know, was there other things that were leading up to it? And then, you know, before you had that moment of clarity in when you were looking at yourself in the mirror?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's almost the scariest question, because the answer is really no. Like, nobody knew how bad it was. And I was so good at hiding it, which is scary for me to say, because I'm sure I know people or have seen people, or you do as well, that are battling and I don't even know it. And I was embarrassed to share any of this with close friends, with family, anybody. The only experience that was embarrassing that helped with this was, I actually was supposed to volunteer at a church function, like probably 2 weeks prior to this moment, looking at myself in the mirror, and they kicked me out. A good friend of mine, thank God she did. She kicked me out when I was walking in because I was dead drunk. And she said, Matt, I love you, but I can't let you in here. And at the time I was like, her name's Peggy. I was like, Peggy, what are you talking about? This is crazy. Thank goodness she kicked me out, because I would have made a fool of myself. And I called her the next day and said, thank you for doing that. That was the most embarrassing moment of my life. Thank you for removing me, because I would have done something really, really stupid. But other than that, nobody in my close circle had any idea that I was drinking to the excess I was. So it was sort of a me versus me. And I'm a believer in God, and I think he had a huge hand in that. But nobody really knew outside of that.
Well, I'm glad you shared that. I feel like my experience is similar with that. Nobody bothered me either about it. I love your perspective, because my brain tries to tell me that it wasn't that bad, right? And still, 13 years later, still tries to tell me it wasn't that bad. And one of the things that it uses is the fact that people didn't say anything. But what you just said, I think shifted that in my brain a little bit, which is one of the reasons why I try to stay in contact with people who tell their stories, you know, going to meetings and things like that, because I need those reminders. I need to hear different perspectives. And hearing you say that other people might be silently going through this as well, just because nobody's bothering you about it doesn't mean that there isn't a problem. And I think that's huge, because there could be somebody listening right now that is wondering if there's something going wrong with their drinking, wondering if they have a problem, but then recognizing that nobody's saying anything. So I think that's super powerful that you said that, because there could be somebody listening right now saying, oh, me too. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And just to add on to that, one of the things that I mentioned early on in speaking is people would hear, I overcame this alone, which isn't necessarily true, because I did have a mentor and I prayed a lot. And people will say, that's inspiring, did it alone. And my response to that is always, I wish I didn't. I wish I would have reached out and had the guts and the courage to share and the vulnerability to say, I'm struggling. I am in a bad place and I need help, because I think it would have helped me progress quicker and also build a community of people around me, so I did not feel alone, because I felt alone through that whole battle. And I used that to empower me a little bit, because once I started getting sober and really healthy, there were certain people and some very close to me like, are you just going to eat chicken, salmon, and broccoli all day, every day? And I started to embrace that, because they were probably fearful I was making changes in a positive way. And I don't know if it was something that they were looking at themselves or, you know, what, it doesn't really matter. All that matters is I was making these positive changes, and I got more comments. I don't know if it was negative or just messing around with me when I started to make progress. And I was just so committed that it didn't really matter what was said. I was going to keep progressing. And then I started meeting people that were healthy and sober, and I didn't even know that existed. I remember forget this. I was driving home. This is when I was still drinking, and there was a poll on the radio, and they said something like, I think they surveyed men and said, can you have fun on Friday, Saturday night while being sober? And I think 40% of them said yes. And I remember thinking, how's that possible? How could you have fun on a Friday or Saturday night being sober? Like, that's where I was in my head, thinking it was impossible to have fun and be sober on a weekend, which is a sad place to be. But that was my truth at that time. And yeah, it was definitely a fun journey, but a long journey, and one that I still battle. And I should preface or finish all this by saying, 2011, this moment in the mirror, that wasn't the end for me. So I stopped drinking for about 2 years, and then I dated what would have been my ex-wife now. And this is not to blame her or blame anybody. I blame myself first. But I got back into drinking wine once we got together, and it was like we got engaged, and that's the celebration. So what if I just have a little bit of wine here and there? Like, that's not really a big deal. What if I just drink when we go on trips? I tried that for a while. And as a former alcoholic, that starts with drinking on a trip, and then it ends with drinking once I get back home as well. So it wasn't until July of 2016 that I officially said, I can't do this anymore. And I put it down. Hopefully, people say, did you put it down for good? And I say, I put it down like one day at a time, but that's the goal, is to never drink again. So it's been since July of 2016 that I've been completely sober.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
So in 2011, though, you said that you met somebody that was a mentor, became a mentor, and by chance, right? You know, not really. I don't believe in anything by chance, right? Things are meant to be. But it feels, those types of things, it just feels by chance. It feels like a coincidence. Can you tell me about your relationship with that mentor and how that relationship has supported you in your sobriety, even through the times that you ended up drinking again? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that deep of a question about him. So his name's Chris. I just talked to him on the phone last week, and we keep in touch very often. He lives in Michigan. I went to this business conference, and there was a health and wellness expert breakout session. And I thought, well, that sounds good. I'm on this, trying to get on this healthier kick. And I sat there. I remember almost everything he said. I was so zoned in on every single word. And there was probably 100 people in the room. He finished speaking 45 minutes later. I ran up to him. I never do that after a speaker. I would normally just say, I'll let him go. Like, I need to meet this guy. So I ran up to him and I said, I kind of just blurted out my story. I'm like, Chris, I didn't tell him how bad it was, but I'm like, I'm struggling with alcohol. I'm overweight. I'm in my mid to late 20s. I shouldn't feel like this. I feel like I'm 70. Can you help me? And he said, you know what, Matt, I will help you. You can send me an email every week. We can talk on the phone as often as you need. And how I share the story is, Chris believed in me before I fully believed in myself. And to have somebody do that, I get goosebumps just saying that, to have somebody that had that belief in me when I wasn't even sure if it was possible to get sober, to lose weight, to get healthy. And he said, yes. And he was living proof that I could do it, because he had a similar story of obesity and then losing all this weight. He competed in bodybuilding shows just like I wanted to do. And he really started to give me that belief that it is possible. And we did. We talked almost every week for the first year until I started to get some momentum and build confidence in myself. I competed with him on stage like a year after this, which was almost, it's probably one of the best moments of my life, where this guy has mentored me and we both won our respective shows in this bodybuilding event. And he's just been somebody that's been there for me whenever I've needed, whether a celebration or a tough conversation. And he's not a sobriety expert. He was obese, but not through, well, I guess you would say through food addiction, not through alcohol addiction. And I think to have somebody that I could talk to, especially in my low points, has been a huge, huge help for me. And since then, I have a therapist now that I've talked to since going through divorce that I'm actually meeting with later today. And I think having somebody that can be there for you, that you can talk to and just share your feelings, is huge, especially, I think, men and women, but it seems like men, we struggle a little bit more for that vulnerability and to be that open. And I almost want to promote the fact that I have a therapist, because it's helped me so much. And I don't want other men to feel embarrassed or shameful that they need that help, because it's just been a life-changing experience for me.
I appreciate you sharing about that relationship, because one of the things that I think is so key to 12-step programs is the community, right? And, you know, I think I shared with you, I work as a therapist. I've worked with people who are trying to get sober. And my biggest thing is I just tell people they need to get into community. If it's not 12-step, a lot of people don't like 12-step communities, right? And that's completely fine. But I think it's important to get into relationships with people and get vulnerable, be seen, you know, let people know that you're struggling, because I really don't think that we're supposed to do this on our own. We're not supposed to do life on our own. We're not supposed to do these struggles on our own. And hearing you say that you have this mentor that you're able to get vulnerable with is huge. I mean, especially like you said, you know, I think that is a common thing to hear from men, that that's a difficult thing to do. So yeah, I mean, if Matt Scaletti can get a mentor and get vulnerable with another man, then you can too, right?
I appreciate you sharing that. I'll share one other follow-up to that, because I used to give these speeches. This is probably like 6-7 years ago. And looking back, it's hard to watch. I watched one of the old ones recently. And I used to give these speeches sharing the highlights of my journey of being on American Ninja Warrior and America's Funniest Home Videos and some of these funny things that happen. But that's not, I didn't connect with the audience because that's not the story. The story is, well, what happened before that? Like, what about the lows to then get to the highs? And it wasn't until I started being very vulnerable that audiences, that I could connect with any audience. So yeah, I think that vulnerability is really a superpower that I have nowhere near mastered, but I'm trying to get better at being willing to be open and honest instead of just trying to share the Instagram reel highlight version of my life, because that's just not reality.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely want to get to those things too, though. I do want to hear about like these cool things that you have done, because of the fact that, I mean, that's kind of the outcome. That's the gifts that you've received in your life because of the struggles that you've been through, right? So yeah, I mean, I'm looking at your short, long list of things on your website. And I don't know if there's something that you really like talking about the most. You know, you've done physique competitions. That first physique competition you did was in 2012, like a year after you met your mentor, you know, Chris.
It was before that. It was October 2011 was that moment, right at the end of Halloween time. And then I stepped on stage, I think it was April 5th of the next year. So, I mean, I went so hardcore into healthy living and working out. And the other thing that happened was, I mean, I was in my mid-20s. So the weight I had was a lot of beer, alcohol. And those first 2 or 3 months, it just slid off. I mean, I probably lost 30, 40 pounds right out of the gate.
It's water weight.
Yeah, it was. That's exactly what it was. So I won a big show. It wasn't until the second show I competed in, I won a significant one here in Pittsburgh. And it was so cool because, and I get emotional saying this too, but I don't think I was really proud of anything I had done up until that point. And it was like this moment of, oh my goodness, like I finally did something that I can be proud of. And if it weren't for the alcoholism, it probably wouldn't have felt as good being on stage. And I'm not saying that in hopes that anyone goes through difficult times, but I think that there's, through difficult times, that victory feels 10, 50, 100 times better when you can look back and say, wow, look what I've been through. And now look how I feel now. It's just a totally different person. So yeah, it was, I competed all through 2012 and a lot of 2013, and then started slowly getting back into drinking, trying to do it in moderation, which, as I'm sure you know, as a former someone that struggled with this, moderation doesn't exist with me in anything, and especially not with alcohol.
So I'm imagining this extreme physical external transformation that year. It was a year later when you started to drink again. Is that right?
It was like almost 2 years later. Yeah, it was almost. Yeah.
In retrospect, when you think about that time where you had this extreme transformation, was there internal transformation going on during that time?
That's such a good question. And I think the answer is definitely yes, but not as much as I needed to sustain this for good. And I think I grew a lot in those, let's call it year and a half, when the first time I tried to get sober, but I didn't have the confidence yet to make it a lifelong lifestyle. And that's the only reason I say now I take it every day by day, because I remember telling myself, and I think my family at the time in 2011, 2012, I'm done drinking. Like, why would I ever drink again? I feel the best I've ever felt in my life. And that's not how it played out. I ended up drinking again. So I think there was definitely more external than internal, because I mean, I look like a completely different person 4 months later if somebody would have seen me that Halloween of 2011. But I definitely did not do the internal work I needed to make it a full lifestyle change. And I mean, the way I know that is when I started dating my ex, when there was a little bit of wine put in front of me, had I done all the internal work, I think it wouldn't have even been a thought. I would have been like, no, I mean, you go ahead, but I'm fine. And it wasn't, this is nothing in her. It wasn't like she said, no, have some, have some. I was the one that said, oh, I'm sure I can just, you know, have one when we're out on vacation. So if I'd done all the internal work, I don't think I would have said that in that moment and then gone down a similar trajectory afterwards.
Thanks so much for listening today. Come back next week to hear part two of Matt Scaletti's story.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Before you go, please subscribe and leave a 5-star written review. Reviews help boost my ratings, which helps other people in recovery find my show. If you're interested in donating to keep this content free, check out the show notes to buy me a mocktail. Don't forget to like, follow, and share with a friend. I'm super excited to know this podcast is helping you. Tune in Thursdays for the latest episode. Until next time.
'Cause we are stronger than we think we are. So fight and show your strength. Good and grace from our God. Good and grace from our God. Good and grace from our God. Oh, good and grace from our God.